From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Florida with the breaking up of an extended family. Ricardo DeForest told NPR 2 weeks ago that he cut off his cousins due to political disagreements. He said, quote, "I hate to say it because family is everything. I disown them. In my mind, they're not family anymore," end quote. DeForest's family is one of many across the nation that is navigating the tensions and emotional baggage of the country's deep political divide. As NPR reports, it's one thing to disagree about tax policy, but what some people say they can't overlook are issues like basic morality, core values, and character. For DeForest, a 61-year-old steelworker, his core values relate to life and liberty. He says liberals, quote, "sold our country out," and that America cannot be a free country and a socialist state at the same time. He also said that what he calls hardcore Trump haters assume that because he likes the president, he must be some horrible racist himself. Meanwhile, Joni Jensen in New York broke up with the man she was dating because she said he was cavalier about the allegations against now Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Jensen is a sexual assault survivor and had known her boyfriend for 40 years, but said, quote, "if this is his core ethics, I don't want that kind of person in my life," end quote. Jensen and DeForest are not an anomaly. According to the Pew Research Center, political polarization is now more intense than ever, and yes, in families too. Nearly 80% of Americans have just a few or no friends of different political perspectives. Now think about marriages. When it comes to relationships, the data shows couples are increasingly moving to ideological bubbles themselves. A 2018 paper titled "The Home as Political Fortress" shows that in 1965, spouses' political views were aligned about 74% of the time. By 2016, that alignment was up to 82%. But political disagreement among spouses fell from 13% to just about 6% over the same period. It's about 1 in 20 marriages in which the couple disagrees on politics. So as our country transitions from one administration to the next, how can we coexist with our political differences and even heal, specifically in our own families? Our guests this hour discuss how to navigate those differences in productive ways, we hope. And I'd like to welcome them now. Cheryl Gates Westerman is with us. Cheryl, thanks for being with us to tell your story. I appreciate that.
Hello, thank you.
And let me welcome Kit and Dave Miller. Kit, we know so well from the Gandhi Institute over the years, and it's nice to have you on the program. Kit, how are you?
Evan, I'm well. It's good to hear your voice.
And Dave, nice to have you on for the first time. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, great. Evan, thank you for having me.
So Kit and Dave, I'm going to start with you. Kit reached out to me just a couple of days ago, and it was so ideal because right before the election, we had welcomed Melanie Funchess. We had talked about sort of handling the emotions of the election, and we got into some of this. But boy, more and more we're hearing from people whose relationships have split, family members who are walking out on other family members, couples who are breaking up. And Kit, you reached out for a reason specifically. Tell me about that.
I did. This weekend, on Saturday specifically, when the election results were kind of officially declared for the presidential election, Dave and I had yet another awesome political discussion where we had different responses to it. And we were both reflecting on how much we've gotten from loving someone who doesn't see things the same way when it comes to politics and some priorities in this country. And it was just, and we just were kind of talking about it for a while. And I said, boy, it would be really cool if Evan did a show about that, because we have been reading the articles and really hearing the heartbreak of families. And, we lost our daughter some years ago, and especially when I hear about adult children or children splitting off from their parents, it super breaks my heart. As someone who's lost a child, I don't want people to lose kids that they don't have to. So I reached out to you, and I said, Evan, I think you should do a program on this. And you were like, okay, great, let's do it. So here we are.
Well, and why don't you tell me from your perspective, Kit, how you see the way you and Dave differ, and I'll get Dave's take as well on this.
Great. Well, I probably would identify basically as like a progressive to sort of left human being. And the issues that particularly matter to me are the environment and women's autonomy over their own reproductive rights. And so those are the issues that I often kind of like lean towards and vote towards when I'm thinking about political candidates. And David's got different priorities than I do.
Okay. Let's do something I think would be very interesting. Let me ask you, I should have asked both of you to do this. If I were a smarter host, I would have. Kit, first, why don't you describe what you think Dave would say about his own values, and then we'll see if Dave agrees with that.
Well, the cool thing is we think we have the same values, although if this could, you know, if we end up getting divorced after this radio program, Evan.
No, I'm not going to do that to you.
Right. All right. We might score some couples counseling after this show. But what I think actually on a value standpoint, we're pretty closely aligned. But I think in general, David's carries a lot more pain about foreign policy and about economic policy than I do. And so it's more that where we really feel deep concern and sorrow and grief and sometimes even rage just differs.
Okay. Dave, is that pretty close?
Yeah, I think she hit the nail on the head. I can't add anything more to that except to say that there are things that there are issues that we really do feel strongly about together also.
What's an example, Dave?
Capital punishment. A pain point for me is our global military empire, but I think Kit basically shares that same concern. Probably expresses it in more skillful ways than I do from time to time. And the war on drugs, I think that we also share the same position space on that issue also pretty passionately, I think, on both sides.
Dave, without cheating here, you know, don't ask, I don't know if you guys could see each other. No eye contact. I want to ask
you. We're not even in the same building.
Okay. Dave, what would you say is the single issue where you and Kit disagree the most?
Somewhere along the along the line of gun rights, gun freedom.
Okay, could you elaborate a little bit?
So I'm for lesser government regulation of personal firearms, and I think she sees more government regulation as a strategy for dealing with and addressing the problem that we have associated with personal firearms.
So, Dave, it sounds like you both want the same thing. You want to see less overall violence, but you see different routes to achieving that and different impacts on freedom.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Kit, how do you see that?
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for David to understand the right way of thinking. Okay.
You are going to go to counseling if you keep this up, Kit.
Yeah. No, we definitely are like 100% opposed on this one. I think it's crazy. The number of guns that are running around this country. And and it's a source of both like bemusement and amusement between us sometimes how differently we see this one.
Okay. Are there any issues on which you disagree, Kit, that have really led to stress or anger at times?
We've been married 29 years. So honestly, we've been working on this since we first met each other. And I think sometimes my sort of willingness to like support certain political candidates that David's not willing no matter what has caused probably some of the bigger like moments of division between us. I tend to vote more, you know, like mainline party, mostly Democratic, but every once in a while, actually a couple times Republican. And he, I don't think, would ever support either one of the two major parties at this point.
Okay. Let me ask then, I can assume then that there was one vote in your household for the Biden-Harris ticket and another for Joe Jorgensen. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Dave,
I think, isn't that right? Isn't that right, Kit Miller? I think I want to confirm that you voted for Joe Biden. I don't know if I've heard you actually say that. I've only inferred it last
week. No one has to say it. I mean, no one has to say it if they don't want to. But Kit?
I think your crystal ball is working as usual.
Okay. Dave, if you lived in Pennsylvania or Wisconsin, would you have voted for Joe Jorgensen as well?
Yes.
Okay. Even knowing that we're down to a few thousand votes in each state that could have ended up determining it, in your view, does that indicate that you don't think there's a fundamental difference between Trump and Biden?
I don't think there's a fundamental difference between Trump and Biden on policy issues, except for the ones that Kit talked about earlier, and the consequences of having the Supreme Court populated by Trump and what that could mean to abortion rights. I think at the end of the day, the two issues that caused me the most pain weigh in the same with both of those candidates. And one is the global military empire, and the other one is the federal debt, which is over $27 trillion and soon to approach 30% of our GDP.
Well, Dave, just like magic, starting in January, Republicans will once again care about that. Isn't it going to be amazing? as soon as the Democrats are in power.
The GOP Republicans, magic.
It's amazing.
They will become conservative again.
They'll be deficit hawks for a little while, as long as they're not controlling all of the machinery. I say that sort of flippantly, but I'm sorry, it's absolutely true.
I agree I agree with your flip.
But ultimately, here, Kit and Dave, before I turn to Cheryl for her story, let me kind of drill down to something I think is really, really important here. And maybe I'll start by asking it this way. Kit, what do you love most about Dave?
I love how passionate he is about the things that he believes in. He's raised my awareness and consciousness. You know, there's been a time when he actually would print out the names of the people that were killed in Afghanistan. And keep them, because he was like, he hated the fact that they were counted as numbers. And it breaks, I think it, I really respect how it breaks his heart that honestly, no matter like whether a Republican or a Democrat is in office now, we basically just have ongoing wars happening with no real conversation. And I've learned a lot from that, and I respect it.
Sounds like you have no doubt in your heart that he has a heart that you respect and love and admire.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's so important, especially because so often now when we think about our friendships and our relationships and just people we work with, too often, and the Pew Research bears this out, if people disagree with us on some core issues, we start to question whether they're even good people or even capable of being good people. Dave, what do you love about Kit?
I love about her the fact that she fully lives her political values, and she in fact has gone to great lengths with an amazing skill, in my opinion, to align her professional life with being of service to people and to helping people understand compassionately the suffering of others. And you know, it's a pretty broad statement, but the work that she does and the way that she does it and the commitment she has to do it, she and her team, you know, even on the issues that either I disagree with or don't hold in utmost importance, it's amazing to see her day in and day out. And it's inspirational for me every day.
Yeah.
So that's now. And, you know, before that, when I fell in love with her, you know, there were a number of things that I fell in love with her because politics was not one of them. Politics, I don't even know when it showed up on the radar, but politics was not a gathering force for us. So I think in that way it remains the same. It's not one that's divisive.
Yeah. I will just say, having gotten to know Kit, Dave, you are married to an amazing human being. There's no question in my mind about that.
Thank God we're not on television right now. I would like to be flaming red.
I have to do this to you, Kit. And last thing before I turn to Cheryl, and then in our second half hour, we'll get some audience feedback if people want to share. And I know it can be hard to share this stuff. One of the reasons we wanted to have this conversation is this is hard to talk about for a lot of people. Kit, in some ways, as much as there are times where you think about Dave and you think, I cannot believe your position on firearms is XYZ, or I cannot believe you don't see the economic injustice of XYZ, is it instructive and helpful to you to be married to someone who you obviously love and respect but views things differently, and maybe that relationship prevents you from getting a little bit too down in a bubble of sorts? Is it helpful at times to hear a different view?
It's perennially helpful for me to know that there's always people in a room who don't see things the same way that I do. Even if there's an apparent unity, I always trust that there's actually something going on behind people's faces, because there's been many family parties where my family, you know, which is Democratic and assumes everybody else is, has said things, and he just sits there and kind of breathes. vice versa, you know, at his family gatherings. So it's great for me to know that. I also want to say that, you know, when we first got together, the only times when there was any like real sense of iciness, or even I would say in moments of almost contempt, were around politics. So I felt the danger of that years ago when we first got together, although politics wasn't a big part of when we began to get talking about it as a young couple before we got married. There were moments that were really, I found, really painful. And so that's part of what I'm understanding is happening for a lot of people right now, is that sense of like feeling like regarded as with contempt because of your ideas. That worries me, and I want to figure out ways where we can have radically different ideas from one another, but never regard each other with contempt as a result.
Do you think it would be harder for you to feel that way, though, Kit, if Dave was someone who voted not for Joe Jorgensen but for Donald Trump?
I don't know about that. I know we have people in our family that voted for Trump, and you know, one of them we just sent a birthday card to and said we love them a couple days ago. So, and we do, and we're trying to love every. You know, like I think that there's so many things going on right now that lead to the presidency of someone like Donald Trump that no one who we know is in charge of or created. And so that helps me to be able to see all of us as, like, sometimes, honestly, puppets on strings.
Mm. Kit and Dave are going to stay with us for the hour because there's a lot I want to explore, but I want to bring in Cheryl Gates Westerman, who is also with us, who has a lot to share on the relationships in your life. And you can take this in a lot of different directions, Cheryl, but why don't you start with the fact that, as I understand it, you and your husband agree not to talk politics very much. Is that right?
That is correct. We also know when it's time to cut the discussion. He'll often say, you know, I'm trying to understand this, so I want to know from you, as my favorite lefty, why do liberals or Democrats think this particular way about this particular subject?
He calls you his favorite lefty, and what do you call him?
I usually don't call him anything. I just volunteer to go down to the pantry and grab the roll of foil and say, I'll make him a hat if he wants.
How does that go over?
Well, generally that means it's time to stop the discussion. But he really, he's been a conspiracy theorist about most things in the entire 27 years I have known him. And so when it gets to be too much, I just say, I can't do it. And you have plenty of friends that think that way, and, you know, take it up with them. It's been much easier since the advent of Facebook.
Interesting. And listeners, as we continue this conversation, if you want to share your stories about how relationships have either been frayed or preserved or challenged, We'd love to hear from you. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. Cheryl, what are the issues or values that matter to you most as a voter?
I believe that I don't think that religion should be hijacked in the political scene. And that's not a problem with my husband. That's more my father. I am the daughter of a former Republican Monroe County chairperson. So that relationship is rough, too. But I just say, Dad, I love you, but can't talk about this.
Okay. When did you realize your politics were different than your father's?
Probably when I went to college and I was meeting more people in different viewpoints and taking classes in political science and sociology and all of those kinds of things, and also some religion classes. And I just really started to think what is important to me personally and realized that my what I thought were my political beliefs didn't line up with that, and it really bothered me.
Okay. Were you concerned with how your father was going to take your changing political views?
Yes, I was. My brother has also made the same flip that I have. My dad has been known to say, I just don't understand how I raised two liberals.
Does he say that like laughing, or does he say that in actual disappointment?
Well, Megan told me I wasn't allowed to swear on the program, so I can't repeat exactly what he said. So it's been rough. I think he takes it personally, and I just tell him, I said, Dad, you should be proud that you raised two independent thinkers, two people who research their positions and understand why they believe what they believe, and don't just parrot and regurgitate pablum that they hear on talk radio.
Are you?
He doesn't listen to you.
I assumed when you meant talk radio, you meant commercial talk radio.
Yeah.
We only have underwriting. That's what saves us. So
there you go.
When it comes to what shapes your dad's views, then, I mean, do you feel like you could articulate your father's views in a way that is effective and fair?
Yes. I do. I believe that he gets a lot of his identity from his political beliefs, which bothers me that that's not the best way to have your sense of self. But that's what is a big part of his life. Hmm. He likes to be seen in the service of the Republican Party. He's loved being chairperson at times and all that kind of stuff. And it's important to him. But we have had several discussions, which is where we then have to stop, where I say, Dad, if you tell me your religious views, you tell me your views on this, that, and the other thing, what you're telling me is not congruent with your political beliefs. And I think you should really do some thinking and praying about that.
How does that go over?
Not well. So then he just says, you know, because I'm more a Rodney King, why can't we all just get along kind of person and agree to disagree? And I said, look, you're not going to change your views, and I am not going to change mine. So, you know, you're my dad. I love you. Can we just not talk about this? And he thinks that's the ultimate cop-out.
It is interesting you bring up identity, because people much smarter than me have really been studying this, especially in light of the current election. And I want to throw out a number that I've seen in a couple of places, knowing that maybe more data would indicate this is wrong. But the number I'm seeing is that 83% of Donald Trump supporters believe that this election was stolen from him. I mean, we're in a very strange at minimum, but also dangerous place if people actually believe that. I mean, there not only is that not true, I mean, tens of thousands of voters in multiple states would have had to be in, or there must have been some organizing machine to steal this in multiple states. But think about what it would take to actually do that. The Democrats are going to steal this election from Donald Trump in multiple states by relatively narrow but solid margins of tens of thousands of voters, but they're not smart enough to actually get the votes for Congress. So Biden's administration will be able to do very little of the agenda it would like because Mitch McConnell gets to keep all of the power in the Senate and they're losing seats in the House. I mean, if this is a scam, it's the dumbest scam of all time. And on top of that, there's just no evidence for it. But we apparently have millions of Trump voters who say at least that they believe it and believe it. And to me, that says that political identity is one of the strongest guiding forces. And many of the people who are not who are saying that they think Trump was robbed are also likely to say they don't like identity politics. Well, they're in the midst of it. They're in the grip of it. And I'm baffled by this, and I want someone smarter than me to explain it. I know you're not going to be able to go very far with that, Cheryl, but I want to ask. I mean, you've got your dad, your husband. I know you have a son. I mean, are the Trump supporters in your life feeling like he was actually had this thing stolen?
Well, let's go back to tinfoil hat hubby. He believes in this. Have you heard of this hammer theory where there's cheating amongst the voting machines and the counting? And all I know is they call it hammer. And he tried to send me something. And in the first minute of the video, they were just saying so many things that were illogical, physically impossible. I couldn't even listen to the thing. And then we did have a fight because he said, you won't even listen to what I'm saying. I'm like, Steve, I listened to enough to know that this doesn't make logical sense. And you should know an inside joke in our marriage is I'm actually a member of Mensa. So when I do something stupid, Steve says, I thought you were a genius. So when something logical, when something just does not compute logically, mathematically, et cetera, to me, I can't even bear it. So that's usually where I'm coming from is I believe science. I believe math. I understand the scientific method. One of the things all these people say over and over to me is, well, Fauci said in February we didn't need to wear masks and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, don't you understand how the scientific method works? You learn more about what's going on and you change your response to that. That's how we develop medicines and vaccines and public health policies. It's supposed to change as you get more information.
But Cheryl, you're describing the kinds of conversations with your husband and your dad and family members that feels intractable, and listeners will recognize this immediately. These kinds of conversations are happening everywhere. They often are not very productive, and yet you have a marriage with your husband for several decades now. So let's talk a little bit about that aspect of it. What do you love about your husband?
Oh, he is just a prince of a man. He's very open, loving. He's a licensed massage therapist. He's in touch with his spiritual side, which, again, is where we have some of these discussions that what you purport to believe is incongruent with some of the things you're saying to me. But he's a wonderful man. He encourages me. I have an ex-husband who is a very far-right Trumper as well, and he always belittled me for having different beliefs and for making more money than he did at times, that sort of thing. It was just very old-fashioned. Steve's like, hey, you go for it, woman. I'm glad you got a promotion, this, that, and the other thing. So he's a wonderful person.
Okay. Good person.
And he is smart. He is very intelligent.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I just don't understand this whole conspiracy theory stuff. That has bothered me for a long time because it's been going on since 9/11. He believes that was a government U.S. inside job and this and that. And I just can't even. So I'm like, please go talk about this with your Facebook friends. And I belong to a number of Facebook groups that are private. And Twitter is my refuge where I can let it all hang out. Although I will tell you that my soon-to-be 34-year-old son blocked me on Facebook, Twitter, and Messenger.
Ooh.
Because I'm such a Trumper or anti-Trumper. and because he said it was because I disrespected his service. He's an Army National Guard veteran. My father's an Army veteran. And so I was trying to talk about the problems with what he's doing to veterans. And my son just said, "Oh, that's a line you can't cross. You're gone." I mean, he still texts me on my regular phone, but social media just can't even.
Oh, wow. Is that emotionally difficult, dealing with the fact that your son has put up a wall with you?
Yes, it has been, but I do still text him. He texts me, and let's just say it's not been as close as it used to be and as I'd like, but I also have to respect and understand that he's an adult with his own family. He has had his military service. He's actually in law enforcement. And, you know, I'm proud of him, but I just can't even get close to his political ideals at all.
Oh, boy, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. And then the biggest thing for me is that I have to be very careful, especially my social media presence, because I own my own business and I don't want to upset or alienate half of my potential clientele.
Understood. Well, I want to take our only break of the hour, and we come back with Cheryl and Kit and Dave Miller. I want to talk about strategies that they have used. I mean, to the extent that they even think overtly about strategies, if you're married to someone with different political beliefs, when things start to get too hot, what happens, and how effective is that? Because sadly, there's plenty of relationships in which there has not been success at turning down the temperature. And I'm not just talking about couples. I'm talking about parents and children, siblings. I mean, you know, some of what Cheryl's talking about with her son, it's tough, but we're hearing that. People saying, "That's it, I'm cutting you out if you voted for Trump or if you didn't vote for Trump," or whatever the case may be. So we'll take some more of your feedback, listeners. I've got some emails I want to read at connections@wxxi.org as we navigate our relationships post-election in a politically charged world. It's coming up. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, on Veterans Day, we meet two Afghan natives who served alongside U.S. troops in Afghanistan as interpreters. Their lives were threatened by the Taliban, and after great personal risk, they came to Rochester on special immigrant visas. They share their stories. Then in our second hour, Home Stage at the Little. It's a new concert and interview series on WXXI-TV featuring local bands. Meet them Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me read some of the emails coming in. Joe sends to us in all caps, "Liberalism is a mental disorder." Okay. Thank you, Joe. Let me find some more productive emails. Sherry says, "While I appreciate your attempt to bring people together, it's important to recognize that political views reflect our deep values. When someone's political stance includes disregarding others' people's rights or humanity, that's non-negotiable. There has to be a baseline understanding about human rights." That's from Sherry. A similar email I'll read from Preston. Preston says, "The past 4 years have really challenged how I think about friendships, and it boils down to, with such different worldviews, is this person I really want to spend significant time and emotional energy on? I hear all this talk about we as couples and individuals may differ on specific issues regarding the economy or guns or abortion, but I struggle with how to get past the basic fact that we've had a president the past 4 years who has blatantly misinformed the public, blatantly lied, and has persistently attacked the very institutions that enable our democracy to exist at all. None of those issues are singularly more important than preserving and strengthening the aspects of democratic society that enables differing points of view to exist, something Trump has been opposed to from the very beginning of his presidency." So Preston and Sherry are both saying that they have reevaluated relationships or would reevaluate based on some non-negotiable items. And Sherry says there has to be a baseline. Kit Miller, is there a baseline for you that says, okay, Dave and I can disagree on guns. We can disagree on economic ways to economic issues and securities and freedoms. But there are some that really would change the way I feel about him in this relationship.
Um, Yes. I mean, if my sense is that, you know, as someone who's interested in looking at the root causes of violence in the world, and so much of what I've looked at, the reasons that injustice is tolerated in so many different systems, has a lot to do with, you know, the invention of racism as a way to control people. You know, when the country was, before the country was even officially founded 400 years ago, my kind of journey with that understanding started earlier than David's. And I think if he had not been able to respect and be interested in that process for me, that would have been pretty tough.
Okay. What do you say to Sherry and Preston who are emailing to say, we must draw the line, and we must be willing to end or sever relationships based on some non-negotiables?
I think it depends on the person on both sides of the relationship. If I don't have the bandwidth or the resilience to stay in relationship to someone who's showing up way differently than I would want them to, then I need to take that seriously. At the same time, there's some people in my life, like one of my oldest friends from grade school is a Republican, and I'm sure she voted for Trump. And I love her. And we've been through, you know, some really tough times together. She was there when I lost my daughter. I was there when she lost her husband. I mean, she's my oldest friend. So I'm going to continue to find ways for us to thread that needle with one another. I'm not willing to let that go. So I also think that if I don't have a relationship with someone, then there's no, you know, chance in hell of me ever being able to be someone that can be influential to them. I think friendships are critical. Who we surround ourselves with, differing perspectives. If I have only people that are in an echo chamber that basically reflect me back to me, I'm not going to grow. So I don't want to have people who only see things the same way as I do. I'm convinced that that's actually going to help me only to become, over time, more narrow in my thinking and more succumbing to, like, single stories, which are dangerous.
Mm. For what it's worth, probably not much. I just want to endorse that idea very, very much. I agree with you entirely. I would not want to only go through life surrounding myself with people who agree entirely with me. I can't imagine growing. Dave, for you, are there non-negotiable issues that you would look at Kit or someone in your life and say, that's one we can't cross, can't do it?
Yeah, I mean, I broadly think of it in terms of issues that have to do with preservation of life. I think if she was not in the same camp as I am around the issues that I care about the most, I think that it would be much more difficult to be with each other. And I think these things that we do have in common and we do share the same position space on have been in place since the very beginning. They were, I think we learned a little bit from each other about them, but I think they've been there from the very beginning. So, I'm scratching my head sitting here about thinking, to really rock our world and lead towards divorce or something. I can't articulate any further. There was an article a couple of weeks ago in Reuters just called "You Are No Longer My Mother," and very much in the same spirit, Evan, as the articles that you opened up about. But one of the heartbreaking aspects of that article was a 77 and 81-year-old couple separating due to this stuff. And it just broke my heart reading it. And it's been with me since. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't think that there is anything, only because we have things in place and have had things in place since the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl, how do you see it? Is there a potential line that you would feel like, look, I love my husband, we're different, we see things differently, but we can't cross this one?
I want to go back to what Kit said, is that not all of the people in my life are at the same level, if you will. There are people that I don't have a problem with ending communication or even a friendship if they are, you know, a casual acquaintance or that sort of thing. But when it comes to my husband, my parents, my son, then certainly I want to look for where the places of agreement are. In terms of a showstopper, mine has to be this whole pro-life business, because while people are very much against abortion, I choose to include all of life. And so I talk to my my right to lifers about their belief in capital punishment, their belief that we should be killing people in war zones, that sort of thing. And I just say, you know, this isn't anti-abortion or pro-life. This is pro-birth. And, you know, your refusal to take care of these people after the baby's born, you know, you don't want government. I just basically try to hit them with some logic of what you're telling me you believe is not matching what the beliefs are for what you're trying to espouse, if that makes sense.
Yeah. How does your husband take it when the conversation goes in that direction?
Well, we honestly don't have any of the showstopper differences in that manner, at least not that we articulate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get to that point. And even my mother, at one point I said to her, my parents are also 77 and 82. And I just said to her, Mom, I really believe this man is mentally ill. And she just said, oh, Cheryl. And then, you know, we go on talking about other things. And I can do that with my mother, and she doesn't harass me, and I don't harass her.
Okay. Well, we're going to return in just a moment to some of the techniques to kind of get away from the temperature rising. But let me get an email from Dan who says, I lost a few friends in 2016 who refused to allow even an exchange of ideas to take place. The whole fiasco when I lost those friends was based on a claim that misogyny was 100% responsible for Trump beating Clinton. He says, we were smeared and vilified as women haters, the entire thread was deleted by the person began it. Dan says that he was simply making the case that it's not possible that misogyny was 100% responsible for the outcome. And he says, this person and their like-minded friends were and are liberals, whose very ideology is problematic, I would argue, because foundational to their ideology is the implicit belief that they have a monopoly on being responsible and or moral actors. In this ideology, anyone who might disagree is by definition irresponsible or immoral. I worry for liberals for this reason. I know there are Republicans or conservatives and Trump supporters who behave similarly and are just as problematic, but the difference to me seems to be that the latter doesn't care to understand the other side, whereas the former, many liberals, refuse to understand. That's from Dan. Dan, I'm sorry you went through that, losing friends. I'm trying to take myself back 4 years, and I know the emotion of the moment was really, really raw. I'm curious to know, Dan, and maybe you can follow up, send me a note. 4 years later, would those same friends who cut you out of their lives tell you, no, it was 100% misogyny? Look, there's misogyny for sure, and misogyny makes it very hard for the Hillary Clintons and Elizabeth Warrens and many others, maybe someday Nikki Haley, I don't know, to succeed in the same way that men do. But I think you're right. It's not 100% responsible for why Trump won 4 years ago. I also know the emotion was really, really raw 4 years ago. And I wonder if you revisited with them, if they would make the same claim. But let me also kind of just hit a couple of points before we go here, because Dan's bringing up something that's important here. Kit, when Dan says liberals have to be careful and not claim a monopoly on moral behavior and responsible judgment, I think that's important, and I think there are certain things that I probably in my own life I would view as absolute, and I think about race, like you said. And but beyond them, I try to be as humble as I can, and I'm sure I fail a lot. When I think about morality and the point that Dan's making, it tempts us to think that if anybody disagrees with me, they are, as Dan says, immoral, irresponsible, bad actors, poorly motivated, that kind of a thing. When I don't think, Kit, most people feel that way about themselves, if that makes sense. What do you think, Kit?
I have been actually was doing some research this morning on the Hopi people, because they tell history. Like right now, they would not be telling history through the lens of who won these elections. They would be telling our history right now through the lens of how technology is shaping us. And I think that technology, especially social media, and if anyone hasn't seen that film on Netflix yet, The Social Dilemma, that's one worth looking at right now. But I think the way that technology is shaping our interactions with one another is increasing our sort of shared fragility and our shared inability to relate to one another. We've been doing workshops called Let's Talk About Hate and Conflict Without Contempt, because I think that there's a rise in the sort of sense of it's okay to treat other people with contempt. And for me, with coming out of a family with an alcoholic family background, like I think of resentment and contempt and stuff as like gateway drugs to real dysfunctional behavior. And so all of us are at risk of that now, in my opinion, in part because of the way that we're being shaped by technology. So no one is exempt, and I think all of us have an obligation to really think again about how we are, what are we rooted in, what are our values in terms of how we're going to be no matter who the people around us are. Who do we want to be? And that's what I'm interested in. And I'm not interested in like cutting people off. I think that for the most part, it's through relationships that we influence each other. And I want to do my level best, as best I can. And again, you know, I have my identity that's, I'm very fortunate in terms of white, middle class, hetero, all that stuff. So this isn't, you know, going to be everybody's cup of tea, but all of us right now are being impacted and harmed by the way that technology is shaping our lives. And I want us to think critically about that.
All right. So about a minute apiece, let me ask all three of you as we close here. Kit, when things start to get a little uncomfortably heated with Dave, what's your first strategy?
Empathy before education. So I always want to remember that I'm more interested in our connection than in educating him on why he's wrong.
Okay.
Okay, a couple more. Double check understanding. Because sometimes for me, like what looks like resistance is sometimes a lack of clarity. I don't understand, you know, we're not understanding one another.
Sure.
And the last one is like in highly charged moments, I try to separate understanding from agreement. And we have had some highly charged moments. This gun thing is just like, you've got to be kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to work on like what are the underlying needs or values beneath your wanting this rather than trying to go for agreement, because we're not going to get there.
All right, Dave, you're up with that about a minute here. And it's nice to know that you have a right to be wrong, Dave. I want to tell you that this country still gives you that right to be wrong. Go ahead.
I think the first thing to do is to be aware of my own lack of data, and the temptation that there is for me is just plug into confirmation bias. I think as I've gotten older, I'd like to think anyways that I've gotten better at standing back and not taking personally what I'm hearing or what I'm getting for inputs, but to stand back and to try and understand where Kit or this person in general is coming from, and to humanize the smithereens out of them instead of them just being opposition point for me and my political beliefs.
I think that's wonderful. Cheryl, what about you?
I think I'd have to go with that current rhetoric
and increasingly over the past 4 years, has become so polarized and divisive. And my view is that we do all generally have more in common than we do in difference. And so I try to find the places where we can meet and do agree. And I also try to remind people, like I said, my father calls me a blanking liberal and my husband calls me his favorite lefty. But the fact of the matter is that I am registered independent and I'd probably fall somewhere in the moderate category. But if you are left of anything conservative, right, you are just a total liberal. And I think that if we really value a relationship, that we're going to figure out where we agree, understand what our showstoppers for ending a conversation are, and steering away from that. Sometimes we even have like a safe word that my husband and I use if we're at a party. I mean, that's not happening now, of course, but if we're with other people, then it signals that's time to stop.
Well, I want to thank our guests for their wonderful insights as we navigate personal relationships. And Cheryl Gates Westman, good luck to you. Thanks for telling the stories and thanks for not cursing on the air.
Thanks so much to you.
Kit and Dave, it's a beautiful story. I've got emails, by the way, from people who admire you. I didn't even have time to read them. I just want to say thanks to both of you.
Well, thank you, Evan, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Kit.
Thanks. Take care, Evan. Thanks for everything you're doing.
Much love. From the whole staff at Connections, we'll talk tomorrow.